Welcome to Tales from the Waystone, a Kingkiller Chronicle reread podcast.
We are your hosts, Will and Phoenix. Let's get into it.
Welcome to Tales from the Waystone, Season 2, Episode 58, Why Ask Why?, where we will be looking at chapters 118 and 119 of The Wise Man's Fear through the lens of questioning purpose.
Fittingly enough, the first chapter in this section that we have read recently is called Purpose.
Convenient, right?
Yes. Now, as per usual, all the disclaimers and all the other stuffs. Each week, we will be examining a section of The Wise Man's Fear through chosen lens and figuring out what we can take from the text and apply to our real lives. We will also take time to focus on a frenemus of the week. And then we will share a recommended thing of the week, or every other week. Finally, we will wrap things up with 7 words from the book and 7 words from our own lives. Before we begin, let's get some disclaimers out of the way. First of all, we are in no way affiliated with Patrick or Author of Swords, Publisher Dot Books. And second, spoilers. Also, a word to our community. Please be kind to yourselves, one another, and the creators of the worlds that we love exploring.
Cool. All right, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about chapter 118, Purpose.
I'd also like to question why we chose questioning purpose as our lens.
I think part of it is because in this passage, we see Kvothe being forced to reckon with his assumptions about what the purpose of his studies are and what the purpose of the pursuit of power is.
Sometimes to very violent and painful ends.
He is, I think at this point, so overly focused on the immediate pragmatic concerns that he's overlooking some of the more important emotional and spiritual themes. So like when we start out here, Kvothe is kind of impatient. He wants to get on with everything. He wants to get on with the sword fighting. When do I get to sword fight?
When do I get to do the cool thing?
Isn't the whole point of this that I get good at sword fighting?
And Vegette tries to explain. No, I do want to point out one thing first. There is more talk of the wind. After all this time, I barely noticed the wind anymore. Do you think that that has more to do with kind of being a nerd or becoming more one with the wind?
I think it's kind of both. He has gotten to the point where he is used to compensating for the wind in everything that he's having to do. You know, he's gotten used to the feel of it, so it's no longer this novel thing.
It's not a distraction any longer.
Right. It's just something that he's a part of. It's just a part of his life at this point. I almost think about it like we go through just oxygen without even thinking about it. We move through it, we breathe it, we live with it, and we very rarely think about it as a distinct thing. It's just a part of our lives.
He says, some days it was gentle and did little more than make patterns in the grass or flick my hair into my eyes. Other days it was strong enough to make the loose fabric of my clothes crack and snap against my skin. It could come at you from unexpected directions without a moment's warning, pushing you as firmly as a hand between your shoulder blades. I think we have to really remember how connected Kvothe is to the wind. It's being described as almost playful, as almost having its own character in a way that wouldn't be described in other stories that didn't have such a focus on the wind.
Yeah, and I think for Kvothe, one, he's not in a scenario where he's bored. He's constantly being stimulated. He's having to do all of this training, all this practice. When we see him really connect with the wind, it's those times when he has a chance to really slow down and just kind of wool gather. And he hasn't really had that.
It's what a lot of people consider to be a flow state.
Yeah. It's an almost meditative state for him. And he hasn't really done a lot of that.
And I don't think he's gotten to that point in his fighting. Like, I assume that most of the people that have taken the red do get to that point with their fighting. But that is the thing that is almost meditative and comes naturally, and it works better when you don't focus on the individual steps of it. I know for me, when I get into a flow state with art or with editing or with playing my music, that's when it's less of a struggle and less of a slog.
Yeah.
And I think that Kvothe is in the thick of the slog with his hand fighting. And I think he wants to move on to a different thing that is novel. He thinks that the purpose of sword fighting is so that he can best other people with swords, and that hand fighting really won't get him to the point where he can best someone with a sword.
Kvothe strikes me as the sort of person who wants to bring a sword to every fight.
But I think he figures that if he doesn't have one and the other person does, it automatically means he loses.
And he is thinking that the purpose of fighting is to win, and specifically to incapacitate, harm, or maim your opponent.
Or kill. And Vachette disabuses him of this thought by pinning his arm in a way that normally he would just submit and say, nope, done. But she just continues to nearly pop his shoulder out of its socket with steady pressure.
I mean, if the point of the fight was to hurt your opponent, then
it should go further than incapacitating.
Mm-hmm. And why is Vachette going easy at all on both for any of this? And she points out that the purpose of the Catan and all of this training isn't to hurt your opponent or incapacitate or kill them. It's to control yourself and thus control your environment and thus control your opponent. And really, this is true of any kind of conflict, even if it's just verbal. Oftentimes, if you want to be able to come out on top, or to come out in an advantageous position in a verbal conflict, you have to be able to control yourself first, because that's the one thing that you can really influence. You don't have to give the other person power over you.
And I would argue that devolving into a screaming match takes power away from all parties.
That's correct. The next thing is, if you have control over yourself, you can actually start defining the terms of what this argument is about. And if you've defined the terms, you're about 90% to controlling the flow of the conversation, where it goes, what happens.
And then we've got to question the purpose of said conversation and whose version of the purpose of a conversation we are going to listen to. I know that in certain conflicts, I have made the other person just rageful by remaining calm, by not raising my own voice, by not rising to their level of fight. But in that, the purpose was to protect myself, where I feel like I want purpose of conversations, of arguments, of conflicts, verbal conflicts, to be we all come out better for it with an honest understanding of what is happening. But it's hard to do that when another person that you are having that conflict with has decided that the purpose of the conversation or fight or spar or whatever is to win.
Ultimately, you have to be able to control the flow of it so that it doesn't get out of hand. So that if you're able to both remain on an even keel and go back and forth and come to understand one another, you can work through a lot of conflicts in ways that don't have to escalate.
As long as that's the goal between both of you.
And if you're controlling yourself, you can help set that goal.
Or you can step away.
Exactly. Then we also get another round of matches with Cillian or Cillian.
Cillian?
Cillian. We'll say Cillian. Then we get another match with Cillian, and Kvothe finally manages to beat her, which honestly, it seems like this is more of a one-off occasion rather than a true, like, yep, he can beat her regularly now.
No.
It seems more like
random chance.
Yeah, like any given Sunday sort of thing.
It could be Cillian. I don't know. We could go back and listen to the audiobook, or we could just keep calling her Cillian.
We'll just say Cillian for now. And Cillian keeps her word and teaches Kvothe her two-handed version of Break Lion, which Kvothe is quite pleased to learn.
The thing about Cillian's fighting, she has a particular weakness she goes after, especially in cis men, which is rather rude.
Kick them in the groin.
Punch them in the groin.
And it's effective so far as it goes, but as Vachette points out in the next chapter, it can get predictable.
And you'd think by now that Kvothe would realize that she's just going to do that, and maybe he would protect himself a little bit better.
Right. It is a first-order optimized strategy that she has developed that seems to be very effective against Kvothe, but it will not be effective, one, against people who aren't sensitive in that region, people who don't have testicles. And it's also not going to be effective at someone who will think to defend there.
I do like that after the win, or the description of the win against Cillian, Kvothe talks presumably to Chronicler and Bast and makes up this little poem. "Come listen all, and I will tell a tale of brave and daring deeds, of wonders Kvothe the bloodless wrought, and of the time he bravely fought a twiggling girl no more than 10, and listen how it came to pass, the mighty blow he bravely dealt that knocked her sprawling to the grass, and the glow of joy he felt."
Yeah. Like I said in the last episode, when you're fighting a child, there's no winning.
Right. So the other thing that is really important that is talked about in the end of this chapter is Cillian's little game of tag. She is playing tag with the sword tree. She uses the stances of the Catan. She uses her fighting prowess, her fighting knowledge, her movement, her what is kind of being described the way that Tai Chi would be described, the control of her movements, the flow of her traveling of her body to avoid the razor sharp spinning leaves that would probably cut most people to ribbons. And she rushes under them to tag the trunk and get back out.
And then she does a cartwheel.
And the first time it happens, Kvothe is just like, ugh!
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Child endangerment's real.
He's probably about to piss himself.
As much as they've been sparring and everything, he doesn't want to see her get hurt.
I mean, he didn't want to hurt her.
Right. And he also doesn't want to get in trouble for it.
But he also doesn't rat her out.
Because I think fundamentally, Kvothe is sympathetic to anyone who would be getting in trouble.
So Cillian only stops this little game when Vachette returns and pretty much like cuffs her. And then while Kvothe can't hear it, he assumes it was the same scolding any child receives. "Stay out of the neighbor's garden. Don't tease the Benton's sheep. Don't play tag among the thousand spinning knives of your people's sacred tree."
Yeah.
If that's not a pat sentence, I don't know what is. That's definitely like, that is his cadence.
It's a dad speech.
And that was before he had kids. And so now I'd wonder with his kids if he'd be like
shirting
himself. And if he would have those same kind of conversations of just, don't do that. Don't do this. Don't play tag with the razor sharp knives, please.
I mean, it's sort of the way anytime you see a warning label, that gets oddly specific. No, they didn't get a lawyer to write that because it's just a hypothetical. Someone's actually done this.
The next chapter is called Hands, which I think allows us to see a different take on what purpose is.
And I think it also provides a bit of a meditation on risk and how to approach risk-taking in life.
The Adem go full throttle. Beyond having that control, the Lothani, the Catan, the control that they are taught so that it is second nature. Beyond that, they go balls to the walls.
They don't do any half measures. If they are going to devote themselves to something, they give maximum effort and they are fully committed to that in whatever that form might take, knowing that there are risks to doing it this way.
But also knowing that if they were to try to mitigate their risks, they may make everything more dangerous.
Yeah, it's sort of the paradox of like when you're engaged in dangerous activities, oftentimes the impulse to hesitate or to not put yourself in that position, while it might improve your overall longevity, that avoidance of risk and not committing to it can lead to a much less fruitful life
it might actually pose more danger. Mitigating and protecting yourself from risk in the moment can make you do things that are more harmful. It's also the same idea of trying to be a careful driver by driving 15 to 25 miles under the speed limit on the highway. Trying to be a careful driver by not getting up to speed when entering and merging into traffic. You are causing the people who feel like there is a flow to have to accommodate you. And if they don't, they're going to cause a wreck.
Well, and you also think about situations like if you're, say, a firefighter, you know, you're an emergency first responder. Your job is to go into situations that are dangerous so that you can help save lives, so you can put out fires, you can do these things that are objectively good. But if in that situation you don't commit to it, if you don't take the risks, the outcomes end up being overall worse. It's not to say that your risks are guaranteed to pay off. As we see here, specifically with the conversation with Naden, like Naden is someone for whom the risk did not pay off. The worst outcome happened. He took the gamble and lost.
And he also lost three fingers off of his sword holding hand.
Yeah, it was really devastating to him. It took him out of the mercenary business. And, you know, he has this meditation on, would he have done anything differently? You know, and he comes to the conclusion that no, he wouldn't. This was absolutely the right decision.
And I think a lot of us have those looking back, seeing if we would change something, if we would have, like, I've had those, right? I've had regrets that if I had made a different decision, my trajectory in life would have been completely different.
You know, I look at it like sometimes you're in a situation where the payoff for taking the risk is worth it, like even if you lose. And it's not to say that the loss doesn't hurt.
And it's not to say that every time it's worth it or pays out better.
Right. Not all risks are created equal. Sometimes the reward or the outcome for taking the risk is negligible at best in the best of situations.
And sometimes it takes years to come to fruition and you don't even know that that's connected.
And Kvothe and Naden share a little bit of a bonding moment here because, I mean, Naden is living through one of Kvothe's worst fears.
I think that as a 16-year-old, the idea that you have to do everything now. Kvothe feels like he has to learn everything now. Kvothe feels like he has to succeed at everything now. That he won't have time if he waits, if he puts it off, if he takes his time to learn. He is in a life stage where a year is forever. Where we're in a life stage where 6 months ago, we finished doing the bedroom project. And I'm still tired from that. And we did succeed in doing part of my studio room. And we have been putting effort into getting my craft area done. But if that happens a year after the last thing, it will still have been a decent time frame for me. It wouldn't be like forever.
Yeah. I think also when you start getting into the professional world, a lot of projects and undertakings that you have are fairly long term. Like the roadmaps on them are things where you'll have things planned sometimes as much as 4 or 5 years in advance. So you may not see immediate returns on everything.
And yeah, things might change and morph over that period of 4 or 5 years so that the project at the end might not resemble exactly what the project at the beginning set out to be, but that's okay. And I think that Kvothe is so concerned about the now, about getting everything now, about the impulse, about the making sure that he is jockeyed for the best position now, that he doesn't realize that the finish line is more years away than his age.
Yeah, he's trying to master in a matter of weeks something that people have been training at for years.
For a lifetime.
He's comparing himself to Vachette, who is 10 years older than him, so like 26 or so. And that means she has probably been practicing the Catan for at least 20 of those years, at least. And Kvothe has been practicing it for a little over a month, maybe two, give or take.
It does say after the better part of a month in Hert. So not even a month.
He's had a month in Hert of dedicated training, plus whatever he's picked up with Tempe, which was probably over the course of like 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah, again, you're not looking at a lot of time. And Kvothe keeps holding himself up to those standards. And that's not realistic.
On top of that, while he wants more sword training, he is hesitant to do anything that would harm his hands. And because he's hesitant to harm his hands, he will not progress.
He's focusing too much on not getting hurt and not enough on actually learning to control his body.
So when we've played things that are like RPGs or specifically MMOs or things like D&D, where there are separate classes that each person can play and whatnot, my approach to how to avoid having to have a crap ton of healing is to kill the thing faster.
Yeah.
And I think when you protect yourself and hesitate and take longer, you're giving the opponent more opportunity to harm you.
And I think also there's a very big difference between being controlled and defending yourself intelligently versus just completely going all out in attack. Like, we look at the fight between Cheyenne and Penta. It's not that Cheyenne's strategy was wrong to use or anything like that. She was taking risks when she knew it was right for her to do so. Like, sometimes, due to whatever circumstances may be available, you may be able to take more risks. And sometimes you don't have as many opportunities for that. You know, and that's privilege for us, right? When you're young, when you're able-bodied, there are risks that are a lot easier to take. And as you grow older, as your body starts to decay, as you contend with injuries and disabilities, some of those opportunities aren't going to present themselves as much. And you have to be more choosy about which risks you take. But that doesn't mean that taking any risks is bad. You just have to be a little more careful about which ones you choose to take and intentional about it.
Well, speaking of injuries, our next section, Zelian harms Kvothe with a swift punch to the genitals. And after the bout, Vachette talks with Kvothe and is like, "Do you need someone to look at those?" "No, Vachette. I'll be fine." "Okay, let's fight." "What do you mean?" I said I will be fine. I did not say I was fine. You have to learn how to fight through injury.
Yeah, it's not like in an actual fight, Kvothe's opponents are going to stop and check on his well-being.
Or not take advantage of every opportunity to win.
I mean, if the quickest path to victory is to use Kvothe's scrotum as a speed bag, that's what's going to happen. And he's going to have to deal with that.
Well, Vachette sets up to do more hand fighting. And Kvothe, ever the diplomat, is like, "Do we have to? Do we have to what? Hand fight? I'm not good at swords. Show me how to do swords better." And Vachette just rings his bell, open hand, hits him. Not slaps him, hits him with the force of her hand, her wrist, her forearm, her elbow, her biceps, shoulder, core, hip, everything.
Yeah, it's a palm heel strike, basically.
Yes. More than once. And knocks him flat on his
ash,
seeing stars. And by the time that he is able to be lucid again, is gone.
She has had it up to here with Kvothe constantly wanting to just think about, "I want to know how to kill people in a fight. That's not what any of this is about." What I see from this is, to go all Karate Kid for a moment, Kvothe has sort of the Cobra Kai mentality, which is to say he thinks that he needs to be ready to go into a fight in all situations, and he needs to think of everything as an opportunity to exert dominance and as an opportunity to kill his opponent, to disable his opponent, to take his opponent out. And when we look at the Lathani, while knowing how to protect yourself, knowing how to kill an opponent, knowing how to disable opponent, etc., is something you need to know how to do. More important than that at all is to know, is that something that needs to be done in this situation? The Lethani is fundamentally about how to read a given situation and arrive at an optimal decision based on that situation.
Kvothe is under the mistaken understanding that he has a silver hammer and everything around him is a werewolf when he's got a sword on his belt. He questions, why have a sword if you won't use it?
The thing is, the Catan is your toolbox, and the Lethani is the set of instructional videos that you found on YouTube telling you how and when to use each one of these tools. Like, knowing that, hey, in my toolbox, I know how to negotiate a mutually beneficial agreement. That's one tool. Knowing how to win an argument, that's another tool. Knowing how to win a knife fight, that's a tool. Knowing how to win a sword fight, a tool. Knowing how to win a hand fight, a tool. Knowing how to win a bar brawl, that's a tool. Knowing how to stop a bar brawl from even occurring in the first place, another tool.
Knowing how to chop somebody's hand off,
a tool. Those are all tools. The Lethani is basically saying, okay, this is your situation. How do you pick the right tool to approach this?
If you're Salian, punch someone in the groin. It's a tool.
It's a tool, but there's only so many scrotums.
And hopefully as she grows up, she'll grow out of it.
Hopefully. I think also Kvothe misses the point that he's also here to teach Salian as much as anything else. Like, if he is never defending his scrotum,
then she has learned that that is the quickest and easiest way to win a fight.
Yeah, he's taught her a bad lesson. Knowing how to do a thing is important. Knowing when to do the thing is even more important. And Kvothe has not really stopped to think about that all that much.
He also hasn't embraced the idea of mastery. He gets good enough is good enough. Next, please. And that works for me, learning how to play like Dear Prudence. I've got all the bits. I haven't put them all together, and I might move on. Which would horrify Kvothe, because that boy knows how to master a thing, and that thing is music.
Well, and Kvothe kind of has gifted kid syndrome.
A little bit.
When things are easy to pick up, when things come relatively naturally to him, when things are fun for him, when it's easy for him to gain success, Kvothe can really dive into something and get really deep into it. Like, this is how he approaches music, artificery, you know, all of these complex things that he's really legit good at. Like, he is legitimately good in the fishery. He's very gifted as an engineer and as a maker. I mean, he came up with the whole bloodless concept, you know, the arrow catch, and made it into a functional piece of work. Like, that took dedication and mastery, but it was at something that he was already pretty good at arriving at success. You know, and then you look at music. That's something that comes pretty naturally to him. It's natural for him to pick up an instrument and play, whereas when it comes to physical combat, his brain just isn't skilled at it, and his body isn't either.
Because he hasn't grown up doing it. Now, he's 16, he has the opportunity right now to gain knowledge quicker than, like, say, us.
Yeah.
But only if he chooses to pour himself into it. And he's missing so many points.
Well, and he's taking the accelerated course.
Without really absorbing any of it.
Which is kind of the peril of accelerated courses. Very rarely is an accelerated course the optimal way to learn literally anything. You can do okay, but it's not the best way to learn it. And I think at this point, Kvothe would do well to remind himself that it is okay to be at the current state that he is at with the amount of time that he has spent learning it.
Well, we'll see how Vachette reacts and whether or not she continues his lessons and how he's punished or guided going forward next time.
Yeah.
So with that, It's a perfect time to dive into who our Phronemos of the week is.
So, you know, there's a couple choices, really. You know, obviously you have Vachette, who is a common choice, and I think she's got some good points this week, particularly when thinking about the purpose of learning martial training and things like that. But the one that I think really resonated with me was Nadine.
So you're saying not Cillian, because, I mean, she has a first order optimal strategy.
Yeah, and that's actually the problem.
Anyway, Nadine is a great choice.
So the thing about Nadine is he is someone who has lived his life in such a way that he is comfortable with himself. And he has made sacrifices as a result of that. And he has taken risks as a result of that. And even when those risks have not come out the way he wanted, even when those results haven't been strictly optimal, he accepts the choice that he's made without minimizing the cost. I think a lot of times we have a tendency to use outcomes to justify our decision making. This turned out badly for me, therefore this was the wrong decision. Or
so are you talking just in hindsight, or are you talking about also future casting?
Both, because we use hindsight to inform what we do going forward. So it would be very easy to look at Naden, who has lost the use of one of his hands, and say, oh, he must have made the wrong choice. Therefore, when I am in a situation like that next, I will do differently. And Naden would say, the injury that I suffered is grievous. I mourn what I lost every day. However, I would not have done this differently, because the choice that he made was in line with his values. The choices that he made were the best decisions available given the information that he had. The choices that he made weren't inherently wrong. Sometimes you can make the right decision but fail on execution. Doesn't mean it was the wrong choice. It just means that something didn't go right when you tried to actually put it into practice. And it's also sometimes you just run into the fact that it's possible to do everything right, to make no errors, and still lose. And that's just life, to quote Patrick Stewart. And here's the other thing, like in something that is highly competitive, sometimes the person that you're up against is just better than you, or they're lucky, or any number of things that happen. And it doesn't mean that you were wrong to make those choices. Like if we're looking at it from an odds perspective, even if you're looking at something with a 98% success rate, there's still a 2% chance that the negative outcome occurs. So if you take that 98% chance and it goes wrong, it doesn't mean that the decision was the wrong one. You made the best decision you could at the time, and you live with the consequences. But that doesn't mean that you chose poorly, or that you chose wrong, or anything like that. And at the same time, it doesn't mean that that loss still doesn't hurt. And it's okay to hold both of those things in your head at the same time. Even when you do everything right and you get the moral victory, you still lost something. And it's okay to admit that that hurt. It's okay to admit that it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to. It's okay to admit that your life may be in some ways worse than it was before. And that said, if the choices that you made were in line with your values, and if there isn't a better choice out there in line with those values, you know, the one thing that he didn't sacrifice was what he believed in. He didn't sacrifice his pursuit of the Lathani. And, you know, I think sometimes it can be really tempting to say that you have to optimize yourself, to optimize all your choices for the perfect outcome every time that doesn't require sacrifice, that doesn't require pain, that doesn't require hurting yourself or people around you. But life isn't like a video game. You're oftentimes stuck in situations that are no win. And so you have to redefine what success looks like. And that's what Naden is living with here. Yeah, it hurt. It was something terrible that happened. And he wouldn't do anything differently if the same choices were presented to him, because the choices he made, while he sacrificed the use of his hand, he maintained his sense of self, his sense of right and wrong, his values. And sacrifices hurt, and it's okay to admit that. And he's someone who has seen those sacrifices up front. He doesn't minimize that. So yeah, I thought that was a very sobering reminder that life isn't always just one uninterrupted point from success to success to success. It is success, failure, sometimes more failures, then a few other successes here and there. But you know, even if you ultimately accomplish your goals, it doesn't mean that those losses you took along the way didn't hurt. That's why I chose Naden.
I think that was a great choice.
Thank you. So with that, we come to our thing of the week. What do you have?
This week, I am choosing something that I'm not completely certain I've never chosen before, but their last video kind of struck a nerve a little bit, like a good one. There is a channel on YouTube called Answer in Progress, and they have three hosts, Melissa, Taha, and Sabrina. Sabrina is the one that I've been more familiar with because she also hosted Crash Course Kids. And she's been kind of in that Nerdfighter community for a while. So it's been really cool to see her continue on with being curious and finding answers to things and finding novel things about the world to explore and study. And I think, first of all three of the hosts are wonderful and are very informative and each have their own specialties and curiosities and use the channel for exploring those. Most recently, the one that made me want to recommend this now, Sabrina looked into why we buy books that we don't read. Like, she tracked the ones in her house that she's purchased that she either didn't pick up or that she DNF'd, didn't finish. And so she's also gone into like the bookish side of things before on other videos, including like, why did we stop reading? Why those of us like you and I, who are very much proud of the fact that when we were kids, we were voracious readers and now struggle. And so, yeah, part of it is the availability of things like YouTube and short format entertainment. But you and I pride ourselves on being bookish people. I can look around in the room we are in and go, that's on my to-read list, that's on my to-read list, that's on my to-read list, and know that it is unlikely that I'll get to all of them, like, ever. And that makes me very sad. But it makes me feel better to have someone who is so curious about the world also looking into this for themselves. They've had videos that I think are very fascinating about things like building fronts that house things that are definitely not like homes. Like in New York, there are facade buildings that hide access to the subway, like maintenance access and things. I just think that the whole channel brings up questions that I am insanely curious about. Some things that I knew I had that question, and sometimes it's an answer to something I didn't know I had a question about. And I really like things that explore curiosities.
Out of curiosity, what was the conclusion that Sabrina arrived at regarding the books we buy that we don't start?
A lot of it does happen to be about marketing. So in short, things that get recommended from an actual source tend to have a better success rate, for lack of better terms. Like if you are personally suggested something by someone who actually knows your tastes, you're more likely to actually read the thing. Some things are about marketing and going and looking at the back of the book and saying, that sounds like an interesting thing, cracking open the book and not grokking.
I think there may also be an interesting social aspect that you hinted at there. So when a book is recommended to you by someone who knows you, that also means that you will have someone who you will be guaranteed able to talk about that with. Whereas if all you have is just sort of a back of book sort of thing, you're like, I could read this thing and I don't know if I'll have someone to talk to about it.
Another one of those things that is driving book sales is BookTube and BookTok.
And that's kind of a weird hybrid way of having that, where you have suddenly an online dispersed community that will talk to you about this book that you're reading.
Exactly. Excitedly.
Yeah.
So, yes. I think it's more fascinating to watch her video than it is to hear me talk about her video. So I would recommend going and watching it.
That's a good recommendation.
Thank you.
And with that, it's time for us to share our seven words. So I had words from the book this week, And I had quite a few choices. So first we have, but my sword fighting is even worse. That was said a couple times.
Yeah, Kvothe was a little obsessive about his sword fighting.
We have, what is the purpose of Sleeping Bear? And we have, the purpose of Sleeping Bear is control. Then we have, first you must have control of yourself. Then we have, and she was back among the leaves. And then still laughing, she did a cartwheel.
I think that one's cute.
Yes. And I have, Two Fingers was not his real name.
That could have gone somewhere else. It also could have gone very badly.
Then I have, how could I have saved my hand? Then I have, it is the luxury of looking backward. Next is, it is the luxury of looking backward. Our next one is, Naden held up his ruined hand again. My next one is, Naden didn't answer for a long moment. Then we've got, when I dream, I have two hands. Next is, you are doing well until the end. And then we've got, must we focus always on hand fighting? And the one that I actually chose is, first you must have control of yourself. I just think that that's a really important reminder that, you know, we don't always have control over our feelings. We don't always have control over our surroundings, but we do have control over our thoughts.
Not always.
But we can try. We can start thinking about, we can make conscious efforts to guide our thoughts.
I think that that's something to strive for, but I don't think that that's something inherent.
And it's not easy. I'm not saying that at all. It's not something you can just do. It's something that you have to practice, and it takes time and it takes effort. So that was my words from the books. What did you choose as the words from life?
So I don't know if you would consider it a little bit of a cheat or not, because my words from life actually came from a book, and it was one that we read for the podcast. My words from life came from The Sandman, which, by the way, in case you wanted to know, there is a new episode of The Sandman analysis. It is volume 6, part A, because I did not finish reading it because it's been a year since we've made one of these, and I forgot just how dense these graphic novels really are. And so I made it through half the book, but I think the words from it are really important to hear. And so I'm not considering it a cheat, no matter if you do or not. And sometimes when you fall, you fly. It was from the opening issue in that volume. It was about someone who was afraid of heights, who dreamt that he was climbing up the top of a spire. And he spoke with Dream about how he was afraid to fall, which is also a metaphor about failing in life, in his pursuits, in his dreams.
I saw a lot of parallels there with Naden's story. And that's actually something that was really in my head a lot as I was reading about that. So yeah, I think you're on the right track there.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. And thanks for potting with me.
Thanks for potting with me.
And thanks for listening to Tales from the Waystone. Join us next time on Tales from the Waystone as we discuss chapters 120 and 121 of The Wise Man's Fear through the lens of creation versus destruction.
We would like to thank our friend Shawnee Jank for our theme music.
And many thanks to Patrick Rothfuss for creating a world that we've enjoyed exploring together.
Audio production, editing, and social media coordination, courtesy of me, Phoenix McCullough.
And writing and project management, courtesy of me, Will McCullough.
If you would like to help support us and or listen to us chat about Sandman, please consider becoming a patron on our Patreon page, patreon.com/waystonepod. You can also get early access. Now, I'm going to be real here. Early access sometimes means one day, sometimes means 4 days, most likely 4 days. Sometimes, if I'm very ambitious, it can be over a week.
You can also join us on our Discord, see the link in the show notes, and there you can find all sorts of japery and memes and fun conversations.
Should you want to discuss The Sandman, or The Name of the Wind, or lots of other geeky properties, or anything that we've recommended, or anything of that nature, join us!
And with that, here's to one more day above the roses.
To one more day above the roses.
Ding! Ding. I mean, if the quickest path to victory is to use Kvothe's scrotum as a speedball.
Speed bag.
Or, sorry, yeah, speed bag. Speedball is something way different. Whoa. Yeah, that's one for the outtakes.
Probably.
I mean, if the quickest path to victory is to use Kvothe's... If the pick is quack to victory...
Okie dokie. Let me know when you are ready and I'll do a lead in.
All right. Sounds good. I am ready when you are.
Trying to get rid of the froggy in my throaty.
Why'd you eat a frog?
I'm non-binary. Frogs come with the territory.
But eating them?
I did not eat a frog.
But you said there's a frog in your throat. That means you had to have eaten it. Unless you like got it as a suppository.
Ew.
How'd it get there?
Nope.
How'd the frog get there?
Nope.
Phoenix, how'd the frog get there?
Nope. No. It's not like it's a hamster or something.
How did the frog get there? You either ate the frog.
Nope, we're not going there.
Was it surgically inserted into you?
We're not going there. I'm so glad I already have an outtake.
You can save it.
I might.